Good morning, this is Linda, and I am going to be reading the Decatur Herald and Review today, dated May 23rd, 2017. We are going to begin with an article on the fire station titled Fire Stations Get Upgrade, submitted by Allison Petty, and it is out of Decatur. The days of leaky buildings, plumbing problems, and facilities too small for their equipment are coming to an end for Decatur firefighters. The city's seven fire stations are in the midst of a comprehensive multi-million-dollar upgrade effort meant to address years of deferred maintenance in buildings built between 1927 and 1994. By the time it's over, three of the stations could be in new buildings, including two, Station 5 near Brentwood Village and Station 7 at the Decatur Airport. That could be moved in an effort to shorten response times in the northwest and southeast corner of the city. The whole project is estimated to cost between $8 million and $8.5 million, Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said. The fire stations need to be realigned to the Decatur of 2017, not the Decatur of 1970. And that's what we're trying to do, he said. The work stems from a report by Dewberry Architects Incorporated, commissioned by the Decatur City Council in November 2015, with findings presented to the council in April of 2016. It revealed problems with plumbing and heating, ventilation and cooling systems, structural issues, accessibility, compliance problems, leaky roofs, and vehicle bays that were too small in some stations. Part of the ceiling collapsed in the storm in the dorm room of Station 5 in 2015, which spurred Abbott to approach City Manager Tim Gleason about the need to assess the stations. We were exceeding our allotted maintenance budget on the fire stations because every year something was happening, Abbott said. These were maintenance nightmares. Replacement of three stations is in the planning stages, and a timeline has not been decided, Abbott said. Of renovations to the others, the first of two stages is underway now, with stations 2 and 4 mostly complete and station 6 slated to begin in early June. The second phase is aimed for later this year. We are excited that the repairs are being made for a lot of reasons, Assistant City Manager Billy Tyrus said. You want to make sure that our first responders have adequate facilities for providing the service, but also, just as importantly, you want to make sure that we are serving the community as best as we can. Repairs, including adding new carpet and laminate flooring, running cabling, accommodating accessibility standards, removing plaster ceilings, and raising vehicle door heights so that almost all stations will be able to accommodate a ladder truck. The work also incorporates measures to decrease energy costs, Abbott said, such as new lighting and replacement of windows and trim around doors. Firefighter John Snowden, who works out of Station 4, said the new appreciated I'm sorry, the crew appreciated the changes, especially new carpet that softened the deafening noise of incoming calls. I don't think anything got fancier. It just got upgrades to a more normal living condition that people would have, Snowden said. If anything, I think things were changed to be more economical down the road as far as lighting, electrical, and stuff like that. In the long run, I feel like it's going to be probably benefit the city financially. Both phases are estimated to cost $2.2 million to be covered by a loan that the council authorized in August of 2016. This is not an open checkbook build, Abbott said. There is a whole laundry list of stuff they have identified, and we did not have the funds to tackle it all. So we are tackling the most important stuff. Why have seven stations at all in a city with declining population? Abbott points to geographic boundaries that have expanded at the edges, even as the population shrank. Firefighters evaluate themselves by how fast they can reach emergencies and aim to meet national standards of less than 4 minutes, 90% of the time. Eliminating a station would mean slower response times. Abbott said each of Decatur's stations must cover about 7 square miles, a longer distance than other comparable communities in central Illinois. The need for more fire stations or improvements to existing facilities is a common one across the country, according to the National Fire Protection Association. In a 2016 needs assessment report, the association concluded that the most expensive department-related purchases a community can make are new or replacement fire stations. Federal help came in 2009 when the Federal Emergency Management Agency offered construction grants to 120 departments, but that program has not been repeated in recent years. So it's unsurprising, the association said, that needs related to the number and age of fire stations have grown. The report found that 2 out of every 5 fire stations are at least 40 years old, and 1 of every 5 stations did not have backup power. That's one issue that the Decatur project will address, Abbott said. While stations 1 and 7 are currently the only ones with automatic generators, he said all of the stations will receive them in the next phase of work. The Dewberry study found that 3 stations had too many problems and should be rebuilt. They include the oldest station, Station 3, in Fairview Park, Station 5, just off U.S. Business 51, north of Brentwood Village, and Station 7 at the Decatur Airport, which is owned by the Decatur Park District. Officials plan to seek new locations for 2 of the facilities. Station 5 would move northwest of its current location, closer to the intersection of Mound and MacArthur Roads, Abbott said. Station 7 would be better suited southwest of its current spot, somewhere near the area of Baltimore Avenue and U.S. 36. Abbott said the city and Dewberry are studying the most efficient way to build the new stations, which are estimated to cost between $1.5 million and $2 million each. Station 5, which opened in 1962, is the northernmost station in the city, meaning it must cover area stretching all the way up to Hickory Point Golf Course. In addition, moisture and drainage issues have plagued the station since it opened, Abbott said. Living just a few blocks away from Station 5, Paul and Verilyn Rosenberger are upset to learn that their neighborhood station might move. The 2 are officers in the Neighborhood Association for Holiday Hills, where they have lived for decades, and Verilyn Rosenberger has voluntarily planted and cared for flowers in front of the station for several years. The fire station being there, I think, is a real source of security and comfort for people who live in our neighborhood, many of whom are older, she said. I would really, really hate to see that be moved. Abbott said he had not heard much feedback from residents about the potential moves, likely because they are still in the planning stages, and there has not been much public discussion of the issue yet. He said he would understand why neighbors of the affected stations might be unhappy, but said the moves would help a larger number of people. It is better for the city as a whole, he said. It needs to be equal for everybody, or as equal for everybody as you can. It will benefit the whole city. City firefighters share Station 7 with Decatur Park District firefighters who service the airport. Abbott described the location as horribly inefficient, since the station is backed by fields and runways rather than a neighborhood. The department's longest response times are in the southeast corner of the city, where they can reach up to 5 minutes and 42 seconds, he said. If we move, it up US 36 a little bit, it is covering the Walmart Plaza area with all of the commercial growth there, and it is covering the growth around the lake from the last 30 years since Station 7 was built, he said. Bill Clevinger, executive director of the Park District, said there have not yet been discussions between Park District and city officials about plans to move city firefighters out of the building. It was not clear what the move might mean for the Park District. We have not spent a lot of time analyzing exactly what all the issues would be that surrounding that, Clevinger said. I think there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered and discussed, and then we can make decisions based on those conversations. Clevinger said the two bodies also had not discussed options for Station 3, which is in Fairview Park. Abbott said the city would seek to keep that building as close to its current location as possible, as it is ideally situated to cover the West End, Home Park, and Fairview Plaza areas. But the station is cramped, and the adjacent lot owned by the city does not provide much room, he said. Across the street, the sloping ground would present expensive construction challenge. Right where it is at is where it needs to stay, and we are hoping Dewberry can make that work, but it has got to be economical, Abbott said. And that concludes that article. Our next article will be out of Forsyth and is titled Decatur Christian School Head Retires. The Alpha Omega Walk at Decatur Christian School celebrates both a completion and a beginning as seniors walk the hallways one last time, accepting congratulations and cheers from the other students, and also spend time with kindergartners giving them advice. This year, that walk included an ending and a beginning for Superintendent Randy Grigg, who is retiring after 5 years at the school and 36 years in public education before that. I just really felt like it was time for me to step away, Grigg said. I like it here. There are not issues. Everything is good. But I have been here 5 years, and I think it's important sometimes to get fresh ideas, new ideas. So I just decided to step away and let somebody else come in. Grigg worked at Central A&M for 36 years before retiring from that district and taking the reins at Decatur Christian. He said he loved the students at both schools and will miss the daily contact with the kids. I could stay another 2 or 3 years and really wear out my welcome, he said, laughing. At this point in my life, I still want to work, but maybe not 50 or 60 hours a week. I'd like to slow the pace down a bit, but still find meaningful, productive work. Grigg has worked since he was 16 years old and served in the military and as a police officer, as well as his years in education. He has not made plans for his retirement yet. I want to finish strong, he said. We tell kids all the time, finish strong. Do the sprint at the end of the race. That's what I'm trying to do, too. Finish strong. Make sure we have everything all set up for next year for whoever that new person is going to be. Staff in place, curriculum, everything finished and ready to go so the new person coming in can just come in and not be stressed with the things that are on the to-do list. He will be at Decatur Christian through July, the end of the fiscal year, and the board is searching for his successor. He said he has no plans to be involved in the search because it would not be appropriate. Brian Minot, one of the school's administrators, said he knew Grigg only by reputation prior to his arrival at Decatur Christian. That reputation was one of a good, fair, likable man, all qualities that Minot said proved to be true. Randy arrived to DCS as I completed my 21st year. He has been used of the Lord to continue our movement forward and brought with him great ideas that have helped to get us to where we are today, Minot said. As I finish my 26th year at DCS, I am still learning, changing, improving my teaching and administrative skills, with much of the credit going to Randy. As Randy retires for the second time, I am excited to see what the Lord has in store for the future of DCS. I have worked alongside 5 administrators over the years, each with various gifts from the Lord. He, parentheses, the Lord, end parentheses, always seems to bring the right person at the right time to do the right thing for his work. There are exciting days ahead, but Randy will be missed. Other changes coming in the new school year include a new band program beginning with fifth grade students. The school has a library of donated instruments and is inviting homeschooled students to join as well. It is part of a cooperative agreement among Decatur Christian, St. Teresa High School, and the Lutheran School Association to share resources to provide more opportunities than any of them could do alone, Griggs said. The search for teachers is underway, and the program will be coordinated by Jim Culbertson, who led the MacArthur High School Jazz Band to national acclaim for many years. Students in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade will be part of the cooperative program unless their skills are more suited to beginning band. Each school will still have its own music program, while the cooperative program will be an extracurricular activity to provide an extra challenge to interested students, said Allison Molan, principal of the LSA High School. Whatever teacher we get on board here will be part of it, Nolan said. They will take the bus over to transport the kids back at the beginning of day to our own program. This is an extra opportunity to work with band members and instructors from other schools. We will still have band and choir every day, and we'll still have chamber and jazz opportunities for those who want to go to the next level. And that concludes that article. And from our Crime and Courts, we have an article submitted by Huey Freeman titled Gunshot Victim Charged with Selling Heroin and Possessing Firearms. And this is out of Decatur. A 20-year-old man who narrowly survived a gunshot wound to his head last week is facing felony charges after police said they found heroin and firearms inside his residence. A probable cause affidavit released Monday revealed the shooting, which sent a Keith K. Wright and a 12-year-old boy to the hospital early Wednesday, came within an inch or two of killing Wright. Another man, 23-year-old Treshawn L. Washington, faces two preliminary counts of attempted murder in the shooting. Police said Wright, a resident of the 400 block of South Moffett Street, survived a bullet which penetrated his forehead and burrowed between his skin and skull, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Bradley Hall. Wright was treated and released from the hospital the same day. He was subsequently arrested and arraigned Monday on felony charges, including Class X charges, carrying lengthy prison sentences. Washington, whose bond was set at $1 million on Saturday, is being held in the Macon County Jail, pending his arraignment on charges connected with the shooting. Formal charging decisions are made by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. The boy, who is related to Wright and was staying overnight at his house at the time of the shooting, survived bullet wounds to his lower right abdomen area, right buttock, left wrist, and right forearm, Hall wrote in the affidavit. He was being treated at HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. A hospital spokeswoman said Monday that information on his condition was not being released because he is a juvenile. He is expected to live, Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said. At about 3:30 a.m. Wednesday, police were sent to the Moffett Street residence in response to a 911 call from a man who reported that he had been shot in the head, Hall wrote in his statement. Wright and the boy were taken to St. Mary's Hospital. The boy was airlifted to St. John's Hospital for additional treatment. In a police interview, Wright said he and the boy were asleep on couches in the living room area when a male forced open the front door and entered the area where they were sleeping. He was wearing all black clothing with a hood pulled over his head, Wright told police. The intruder almost immediately fired approximately 5 rounds at him, with one striking him in the head, Wright said, according to the affidavit. After he was hit, the black male then fired several more rounds at the boy, who was on the adjacent couch. Wright told police he then ran to the bedroom of the residence to get his own gun. When Wright returned to the living room, he attempted to fire a round at the intruder, but the gun jammed. The assailant then fled from Wright's home. After police developed information that identified Washington as the shooter, he was arrested at about 12:35 Friday afternoon on the 700 block of East Johns Avenue, around the corner from the shooting scene. Washington denied all involvement with this incident and advised he was not the shooter. Hall wrote in his statement, "It is not known whether Washington has retained an attorney." Washington recently completed a parole term after serving consecutive 3-year sentences in the Illinois Department of Corrections for convictions of aggravated battery, great bodily harm, and possession of a stolen motor vehicle in 2011 Macon County cases. He was released from prison July 11, 2014, and discharged from parole on July 15, 2016. Wright was arrested Wednesday afternoon after police found the contraband, including a stolen handgun, inside his residence. As police conducted a routine protective sweep of the residence following the shooting in order to ensure the safety of first responders, officers observed 2 handguns, cannabis, and functioning digital scales in plain view, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Adam J. Ross. Heroin was located in a closet in his bedroom, along with various packaging materials, and Dorman, a substance commonly used by heroin dealers to cut or increase the volume of the product, J. Ross wrote in his statement. Wright admitted that he was responsible for the 2 handguns found in the residence, a .38 caliber semi-automatic handgun and a Sig Sauer 9mm handgun, which was discovered to have been stolen from a vehicle February 1st in Decatur, according to the affidavit. Wright did not possess a firearm owner's identification card. Wright is being held in jail on a $250,000 bond and appeared in court Monday for his arraignment. Wright, who told Associate Macon County Judge Phoebe Bowers he is trying to hire a private attorney, was arraigned on 6 felony counts, including 2 counts of Class X armed violence for possessing a dangerous weapon while committing the crime of possession of heroin. Each count of armed violence is punishable by 15 to 30 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. He is due back in court to present his attorney on June 2nd. Wright's other charges are 2 counts of unlawful possession of a firearm and 1 count each of unlawful possession of a controlled substance and unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver within 1,000 feet of school property. The residence is across the street from Johns Hill Magnet School. And that concludes that article. We're going to read out of the dialogue section, and I have an editorial. It is titled, "Our Views, Exercise Caution with Fire and Water." The end of a school year and the approach of Memorial Day mean a number of things to each of us. But for some, the time is a mental notice that it's time to fire up the grill right after pulling the swimwear out of storage. There are grillers and swimmers who do so year-round, but their numbers are about to soar with the temperature. You've heard the advice and cautions dozens or hundreds of times. The reason you've heard it that many times is because it's important information to remember. You only need to forget or even be lazily negligent once for a tragedy to occur. So, fellow grillers, pay attention to the reminders issued by the National Fire Protection Association. 3 of 5 households own a gas grill. Each year, an average of 8,900 home fires are caused by grilling. In 2014, nearly 17,000 people went to emergency rooms because of injuries involving grills. More than half of these injuries were the result of burns. So, use propane and charcoal grills outdoors only and well away from things like your house, deck railings, eaves, tree branches, or anything flammable. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grill area. Keep your grill clean. Remove grease or fat buildup from the grates and from the trays below. Never leave the cooking unattended. Never use gasoline or any other flammable liquid except charcoal starter or lighter fluid to start a charcoal fire. Never add charcoal starter fluid to coals or kindling that has already been ignited. After charcoal grilling, douse the fire with water. Make sure the area is cool to the touch before leaving the area. Never empty coals directly into a trash can. This week marks Health and Safe Swimming Week. Statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that from 2005 to 2014, there was an average of 10 daily fatal non-boating related unintentional drownings in the United States. Drowning ranks fifth among the leading causes of unintentional injury or death in the United States, and it is the second leading cause of accidental death of American children ages 1 to 19. Livestrong.org lists 10 relatively obvious yet important safety rules, and I will read them. Learn to swim. Supervise children. Swim only when a lifeguard is on duty. Do not swim under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Never swim alone. Do not swim during thunderstorms. Avoid jumping in headfirst. Refrain from horseplay in the water. Use proper flotation devices, parentheses inflatable toys, rafts, air mattresses, and water wings should not be used as life-saving devices for children, in parentheses. Know first aid and cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR in other words. Also, the CDC recommends four-sided pool fences at least 4 feet high with self-closing, self-latching gates unreachable by children and that open outward. Fortune favors the prepared. Be aware and cautious, and our experiences and memories will be of fun times. And set aside a couple of grilled hot dogs for us. And that concludes that article. Just a few short things as we round out part one. Today I have a career fair, in case you have any interest, on May 28th through June 4th. So you can sign up online to that at herald-review.com/jobs. Let's see, we have a music camp June 5th through the 9th, 2017, kindergarten through 6th grade, called Sing to the Lord at the First Baptist Church, daily from 9 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. It's a free program for children K through 6th. For information or registration, you can contact the Decatur, let me give you the phone number, area code 217-875-8034. And I think we're just going to wrap up part one of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 23rd. This is Linda, and I'll be back after taking a short break to read you part two, and I hope that you will join me.